when you're not a retirement league, but you are a petting zoo league. It's That's So MLS, a North American soccer podcast with myself, Andrew Bates, and Nick Thornton.
Yeah. Oh, jeez, I wasn't ready for that one. As soon as you said you were going to do his Latin thing, I thought it... I'll be honest, I thought it was going to be kind of a cheap shot, but that was good. That was good.
As you may have heard, the Manchester United want away to MLS pipeline has continued.
Mm-hmm.
Zlatan Ibrahimovic has been signed using TAM, which I guess is the now the nadir of that concept. It's finally come good to the LA Galaxy to be up here sometime. What do you think of the histrionics, the celebration, including a video of him walking around with a lion?
Oh, I didn't see that. How did I miss that? I mean, that's what he posts on a Vine on a regular Thursday, right? Like, if you go to Zlatan's apartment at any time of day, he's probably walking around with a lion.
It's a very produced promo video where there's like neon lights and he's walking down a ramp in an LA jersey, and then he turns towards the camera and there's also a lion, and he just
why.
And he walks towards the camera with the lion, and he says, I can't remember the line, but it's something like, Zlatan is here, or something. Refers to himself in the third person, definitely.
He's such a weird dude. but I forget who it was. Oh, it was my buddy Travis. I think you know Travis, too, was saying yesterday that, like, the thing with Zlatan Ibrahimovic is, like, if you take him seriously, you're going to just be annoyed as all hell at him. Yes. You do get the sense that he's kind of taking the piss constantly. Like, he does have a massive ego, but also he loves being the villain, and he plays that to a T. And
is it good? Is it a good gimmick? This is my question. And we know it's a gimmick. Is it a good one?
I don't necessarily think it's a good one, but it's made him a shit ton of money from, you know, of course, everywhere he's gone, he's scored goals. But has also struggled, and whether that's on the pitch or off the pitch, he's struggled. And there's a reason why, you know, as great as he is, he's not necessarily the first name that comes to mind when you think of the greatest players playing today. And I always have gotten the sense from him that there was a little bit more potential there. Like, the ceiling seemed much higher than it might have actually been. And part of the gimmick, I think, is not letting on that maybe he wasn't actually as good as people thought he would be or could be. Which... also, it must be said, he's a fantastic player and he's a legend. Okay, you asked me what I thought of the trade. Sure, why not? I'm excited to see Ibrahimovic play in MLS. At the same time, a guy that's recently struggled with some pretty serious knee injuries at 36, he's coming in to sell tickets to a boring... struggling LA Galaxy, and he will score some goals while he is there. Is he going to be the goal scorer of the year in MLS? I don't think so.
Do you think that, and I think that the difference, this is the difference between Zlatan and Bastian Schweinsteiger, is that Schweinsteiger is more of a playmaker, so doesn't necessarily have that pressure to produce. We have talked a little bit about, and this was my main thought for LA Galaxy, that they had kind of been lacking a spark or any big change, and I guess this is a big change if you're looking for something to shuffle the deck a little bit to make it to sort of change the results from what happened last year.
Absolutely, and I mean, I wanted to take some pot shots at Zlatan, but yeah, he's going to come in and he's going to excel. He always does. There's not a league in the world where he's going to come in and not score goals. I do think it is a little bit of a gimmick signing for a player that really doesn't have a lot of options at this point in his career, for people that are going to spend that Zlatan kind of money to get a player that they don't know what he's really capable of at this point in his career. We know what he's capable of in one sense, but his fitness is a question. It is a big ego to take on and a big salary. And so I think really it's going to be an LA Galaxy. It's going to be a big Russian club or a Chinese club that signs him. It's really just kind of a guy to sell some jerseys and bring people in and build excitement. Ziggy Schmidt's already apparently hinted at the possibility of an Ola Kamara Zlatan duo up top, which could be a rather tasty treat and kind of an effective thing. I think really, you know, are they going to get an on-field leader in the classic sense? Maybe not, but they're going to get somebody that's going to set the bar very, very high, and it's going to make people like Alessandrini and the Dos Santos brothers really have to pick up their game to provide service and get him into the game. And if they don't, they're going to hear about it.
You've got to imagine they want to do the tandem, because I just think with having brought in Ola Kamara, it would be so awful if they were going to try and switch to a one striker retirement man thing for him. Just imagine seeing this news. There was that there was an MLS player survey last week, and a lot of players were talking about sort of the challenges for getting young players minutes. Mm-hmm. And swapping Ola Kamara for Zlatan is, while on an obvious star power difference, but it's not what you necessarily want for development of the game. The one point I wanted to make about salary is he's taking quite the salary cap cut, because he's not a designated player. I think this is what surprised me the most. CNBC.com says he was making $27 million at USD a year at Manchester United and will be making just $1.4 million in LA. So that's a sizable chunk of money. We've seen other players come in to MLS that were stars in Europe, but I don't know. I mean, he's definitely, unless there's some serious injury issues, I can't imagine he won't be worth $1.4 million.
No, and I just wonder, too, if it's sort of like the Beckham deal where he's got some, you know, few ticket sales percentages and jerseys and the endorsements as well. I mean, he's not, people know him in America, like soccer fans know him in America, but the endorsement deals that could come from this. The other thing, too, and again, don't get me wrong, I'm not going to be eating my words when he comes in and scores a bunch of goals and rips up defenses all over MLS. I think he's going to do that. But also, what were his options? You know, he wanted out of Man United. Yeah. He clearly wasn't going to get any time there. Again, I really, of course, any club in the world would want him. But when you actually look at what, you know, the real possibilities were, it wasn't exactly like people were knocking down Man United's door to sign him.
I think that it is a positive to think about for MLS, that as much as I'm sure there is no MLS team that, you know, couldn't have made any space, I think that the key MLS teams, like, I don't exactly see where he would have fit in LAFC, for instance.
No. I think I actually think this is where it's a good bit of business for the Galaxy, is that I think they're really the only team in MLS that kind of need a player like Ibrahimovic. If somebody that, look, if he comes in and scores 8 fantastic goals this season, that's, you know, 12 points for LA. That puts them in a playoff position and makes them compete and hopefully attracts other names to the club. Right now, there's really nothing to get excited about for LA. And we'll talk about more about that in a second when we talk about the game they just played. They're a team that's really failing to excite, and now that they've got their rival neighbors, LAFC, that has some great signings and has the excitement of an expansion side, but is also scoring a ton of goals and doing quite well so far, I think there is a sense of pressure for LA Galaxy to shake things up a little bit and find a bit of return to form of what we come to expect and associate with LA Galaxy.
Yeah, and I think a big question because of the so playing time issues that he had is where and when we're going to see him. He did not make an appearance at the away game in Vancouver to play on the artificial turf, but it's unlikely that he will feature, or at least there's no commitment to whether he will feature on the weekend at the inaugural LA Crosstown Derby with LAFC. Do you think that's going to be a weird holding pattern? When do you, how soon do you think we will see Zlatan?
I agree. I think it'd be quite rushed to have him playing this weekend. I guess the Galaxy staff will have to assess his fitness and whether or not he's ready to go. I mean, a semi-fit Zlatan in MLS could probably still compete. I would expect we're a couple, if not a few weeks away from seeing Zlatan as maybe a 60th, 70th minute substitute. And I would expect to see him as kind of a bit more of a, maybe not a super sub, but, you know, a halftime substitute, the 60-minute mark, probably a few matches with 90 minutes. But, you know, we have to remember, too, he's coming in at a very different time than a lot of older players who have come to MLS have. And, you know, even Schweinsteiger struggled with fitness when he first came to Chicago, not just because of his age, but because of the physicality of the league. And, you know, Zlatan's a big dude, and he's a fit dude, and he plays world-class football. But the short answer is, I don't think LA Galaxy is going to be in any huge rush. They're going to assess where he's at. I'd say a 2 to 3 weeks, probably.
That makes a lot of sense. He was not at the Vancouver LA 0-0 draw on the weekend. Neither were you.
Neither were the Whitecaps or LA Galaxy, I don't think. I don't think anyone came to that that match.
I caught the first. Caught the first two thirds at a bar, and I caught the final third the next day, which is, I think, the only time anybody caught the final third.
Yeah. What do you make of this 0-0 draw, LA Galaxy, Vancouver? I felt like there was a bit of, maybe not pressure, but some expectation the Whitecaps would come in and kind of dominate a depleted LA Galaxy that were without a numerous key players. What do you take away from this non-result?
I think that there, like, obviously there wasn't a lot of gunpowder in the keg for either team, but I think that if you look at how things unspooled, there were a lot more chances for Vancouver. That there was a lot of, you know, work for Stefan Marinovic in the Vancouver goal. I saw some good stuff from Kai Kamara. I saw some good stuff from Christian Teixeira, but I think that maybe that's a good point, that they just, with the idea that this was sitting there waiting for them, weren't able to sort of grab hold of it. As much as so many people were missing from LA, do you think that this is a sign of how much Kendall Waston means to the team? Because he was also missing on international duty. Could that one absence be as important as the absence of everybody else on the other side?
Yeah, I was thinking about that because I kind of had the same question. And I was sort of thinking, you know, what does it mean to take away that key piece and not have that same pressure going forward? But I thought the defenders handled the game well. It was good that they got a clean sheet. This is a relatively new back line that hasn't played together much. The last time they played together, They got destroyed in Atlanta. So,
oops.
Yeah, oops is right. I thought it was an okay result, but then I was thinking about it, and I was like, you know, given the personnel on the field, this is basically a new team. And it sort of, from the looks of it, looked a little, I don't want to say quite preseason, but, you know, Robinson said after the match, you know, the quality wasn't anywhere near good enough, but you're right, they did get chances. Teixeira had a number, as you said, Kamara had a number. And it was just kind of one of those things where, you know, they couldn't seem to buy a goal, but at least they seemed to be doing some of the right things well. Alphonso Davies, I think, had one of the best plays I saw this week with his tracking back run, you know, where he's down in the attacking end and he just follows his man all the way back, steals the ball in his end, and then is able to create a play out of it. So that's promising. But for as many changes as the Whitecaps have made and the quality players they've brought in, they haven't played together very much. And a lot of them are, like Jordan Mutch and Felipe are brand new. They've played, well, 1 and 2 games respectively, I think, with the Whitecaps. So this is, they're a team that's going to take a while to gel. And I wouldn't be quite ringing the alarm just yet. The flip side of this is that a depleted team always seems like an easy target until you think about all the younger players and the players that have been waiting for their chance to come in. And while they didn't excel or blow away the Whitecaps, I think they also kind of held their own. And players with something to prove are always going to be a difficult opponent and harder to read as well.
That's right.
In some ways, it's easier to play a traditional LA Galaxy that Robinson's played any number of times. He knows how the Dos Santos brothers are going to play. He knows how... who else was missing? There's another big player missing from LA Galaxy, and I'm blanking.
It's hard to scout when you're when you don't have as much tape, but the tape is not accurate.
Yeah, exactly. And I sort of think, you know, credit to LA for making it difficult, but I was kind of disappointed. You know, the game was at home and I missed it, so I was sort of glad that I didn't miss some incredible game. But I don't think it's a bad result.
They were missing Ola Kamara. They were missing Emre Clementa with Norway and Montenegro, respectively. And they were missing Ashley Cole was suspended.
Oh, Ashley Cole. That's the other player I was thinking of.
There were some injuries as well. So it was a big... There were some questionable... Both Dos Santos, Ellison Dreamy, Pedro, and Bradford Jamieson were listed as injured prior to the match.
Yeah.
So it was definitely a new team on that side of the ball.
Yeah. And, I mean, my one sort of criticism of the Whitecaps approach the last two games is, and it's not just because I'm a fan of his, but if you're having trouble getting your players into the game, don't you want your probably, at this point, most creative connector in the middle at the back in Russell Tybert? And I was disappointed to see him kind of absent again, knowing that, like, he's young, sure, and doesn't have... I mean, he has MLS experience, for sure, but he knows the team, and he knows the style of play, and he knows how to execute it. And I was surprised to not see him involved.
It seems like... As much as it seemed earlier in the preseason that they were ready to hand him a little bit more of a leadership role, lately it seemed like Carl Robinson would like to give Felipe some time to see if that is anything.
Yeah, and I thought Felipe did well. From what I saw, there were some great passes that he had as well. The one sort of final note I had is just a player that, you know, and this is kind of just going from the highlights and bits of the game that I saw, but a player who's really just fallen off a cliff since coming back is Jordi Reyna. And I thought he had one of the clearest chances of the match. And, you know, 1v1 against a goalkeeper is a difficult situation, but we saw plenty of games where players put that ball away. And to just fire it into the foot of the goalkeeper... I thought was quite poor, and I'm kind of wondering what you think of, you know, have we just seen the peak of creativity for Reyna? Is what's going on that he's not this player that we saw last year? We've talked about the off-field stuff, but, like, to me, this is a bit of a head-scratcher, but what do you make of it?
I've watched a number of the preseason games, and I've seen... at least part of all of the games so far this year, and I can't say that I have seen much of, like, you know, he's been kind of an invisible player to a certain degree. I think that both the fact that he was such a non-factor in preseason itself in terms of, you have all these acquisitions that are coming, and their integration of the team kind of I remember at the draft, seeing as the draft commentators were planning what Vancouver's formation could look like with some of the new arrivals, whenever I saw anybody with Reyna in their proposed 11, I'm like, are you sure? Mm-hmm. Because there had been that announcement that, you know, seven to nine players were going to go, I feel like up until the moment you saw Reyna in a starting lineup in the first MLS game, you weren't really sure that he was going to return. Mm-hmm. The Alessandra Chicano incident is still a going court issue in Peru, but in I don't know if you put it down just to that or what, but it certainly hasn't seemed like he came out of preseason ready to go like he did last year. It's hard to say what his future is going to look like. I can only see how things develop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I mean, with any player and this season, this early in the season, you don't want to read too much into things. But as you mentioned too, with even preseason, it's clear the Whitecaps were kind of hiding him from the media a little bit and trying to shelter him. But just on field, you barely hear his name and barely see him involved. And when we have seen him involved, you know, there's going to be continued pressure for that spot. And from what we've seen so far, I think it's kind of a hard justification to have him in the starting 11, not creating anything. At this point, I'd go, you know, Mosquito is not the best player in the world, but can be a difference maker. I don't get what the argument is of starting Reyna over Mosquito. I know Mosquito can play out on the wing too, but he can play centrally. For me right now, especially looking at Columbus, I go, I'd be putting somebody else in there aside from Reyna.
Yeah. I think that a big, another part of the issue is that I don't know that Reyna is great out wide either.
No.
If there's been...
I think last year he developed a really good partnership with Montero, and I think that's part of it as well, is that he's not... You know, Montero is a quick and versatile striker that likes to get into tight spaces. You know, and Kamara is fast, but in a very different way. And, you know, I don't know if it's just taking used to getting used to each other, but yeah, I mean, I would imagine there's some concern right now, although of course you're going to get the official line of its early days and finding form, etc. But it is a little concerning to me that, you know, some of the folks that were brought in to really help the Whitecaps perform really haven't provided much. And, you know, when Breck Shea has given you more than Jordy Reyna, I think you have to start asking some serious questions about who's around in the summer.
I think that you would want to see, I think that with the players that are on hand, doing something more in the mold of a 4-4-2 diamond might be good, or just looking at this now, to have a player that's more of a DM like Juarez out in a player who is ostensibly an attacking midfielder on either side of the midfield just seems like a rough proposition.
Yeah, I agree. Moving from a kind of not exciting game to probably one of the more exciting games of the weekend, because there's only six games, Colorado and Sporting Kansas City battled it out to a 2-2 draw, but sort of against character. This was actually kind of an exciting draw. What did you make of this match?
Colorado has had it so rough for so long that when you see them go up by two goals in the first 10 minutes, it's just such a relief to see that happen, to see it happen at home. Like,
I was watching the highlights. I knew what the end result was. And when they went 2-0 up, I was like, oh, come on, Colorado, hold on. I knew what the result was going to be.
And, like, that hasn't necessarily been... It's not like I think that you know, I think it's also at the same time as it's been tough for them, I don't always feel bad for them just because it seems like they are the architect of their own misfortune on occasion. And I think that this was one of those games.
It sure was. I think the biggest storyline from this game is what the hell is going on with SKC's defense, because nobody was injured. This is one of the strongest backlines in MLS, and they gave up two relatively early goals. Just getting a little bit caught out and sort of being switched off. But watching it a few times now, I kind of go, well, it seemed to me just like a couple of little errors that are not characteristic of them. But it's something I don't expect we're going to be seeing too many times this season from them.
No. I think that... Now, you did mention that this has been... This isn't the only time that we've seen little errors crop up from Kansas City.
No. Which
legendarily has the... legendarily has that sort of reputation. I think that if you, I think that it's possible to catch somebody starting cold.
Yeah.
Which, and that the first goal definitely looks like that to me.
Yeah, and I mean, and it is a great goal. I don't want to take anything away from Baji. I think he's definitely an underrated striker in MLS and has been quite unlucky in Colorado. But I do think he is a great player, and it's a well set up little goal that just kind of catches SKC sleeping.
You called Kansas City as your team of the week last week, if I recall.
I did.
And I think that...
What of it? Are you showing up with receipts now to return my goods?
No, and I'm saying that they earned your call because of the way they were able to come back late in the game. Mm-hmm. Push until the very end of the game to be able to come out of Colorado with a point.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing that you want to see, which is where I think, you know, you don't need to ring the alarm just yet with Kansas. It's all about response, right? At this point in the season, teams are going to go down 1 or 2 nil in the first half, and they were down 2-0 for much of the game. But Gutierrez just, with a little flash of brilliance, gets in there, and then towards the end, as we've seen time and time and time again with Colorado, is they're just everyone's standing still. The funny thing is the other side of this storyline is that this could have been 4-2 for SKC had it not been for the heroics of Tim Parker, who, I mean, he was playing like
Tim Howard.
Yeah, Tim Howard. Sorry, not Tim Parker. Other Timmy. Tim Howard was playing like a 1990s stand-up NHL goalkeeper. He was throwing his feet out. He was throwing his gloves out. He was everywhere. It was one of the best performances I've seen from Tim Howard in a long time. And certainly we see highlight reel saves just about every week from him. But they're still giving him far much to do. And although it's a beautiful, beautiful little back heel pass, it just needs to be dealt with, and Colorado just they really need to do something about that back line, because I honestly believe that if they can bring in a center back that can calm down and organize, and maybe a little bit of a better central defender, defensive mid, that they could be a real force. We saw in the first few minutes of this game what they can do when they break, and that they do have quality in the final third. It's getting those chances and getting the ball out of their half to even get those chances that's been their problem.
Mm-hmm. I think that this is something that I was thinking about a little bit with Minnesota, is that that right now Colorado is clearly hewing to the, we have a great goalkeeper, let's just buckle in and hope. And they've been doing that for more than a season. I don't know what the answer is, if it's to maybe go and make another big defensive signing. You would hope that maybe time would help that as well, but it doesn't seem to have, because I don't recall them making too many moves in the back line in the off season, although I could be wrong.
No, and I mean, and Hairston is okay, and he has his moments, but certainly just seems out of element at times, and For me, Colorado still just doesn't quite have the juice to really do too much this season. And as good as it was to see the two opening goals, we're seeing all the same Colorado problems that we saw last year. And it could be a very, very, very long season if they can't begin to address some of those little errors.
Mm-hmm. As noted, I feel like when you look at Minnesota's game against the Red Bulls, which mm-hmm. ended in a 3-0 win for New York, they're clearly, well, I mean, they're not getting what they need in many parts of the park, but I feel like they cannot hang their hats on the performance of Lampson.
No. Indeed not.
He's caught out of position in the first goal, and he just wasn't that. If I think of the great bad MLS sides, like Joe Cannon playing for the LA Galaxy in like 98 or sorry in 2008, or maybe I'm thinking of the year wrong, or if you. Or Raimondo right now playing for RSL.
Yeah.
They're all anchored by this harried, angry, soul-crushed great goalkeeper.
Yeah. As much as I feel bad for Tim Howard, I really do feel sorry for Matt Lampson. I think he's such a great goalkeeper, and he is sort of being hung up to dry. That being said, Red Bulls are in good form this season, even with the midfield departure of Sasha Kljestan and Felipe as well. They've been able to produce, and their youth players have stepped up. Alex Mule seems to be back on form. And Bradley Wright Phillips refuses to die or stop scoring
goals. I'm so impressed. I'm so impressed by New York.
I'm going to call it now, and you can hold me to this. I'm not going to say anything bad about BWP this season. I think he's an amazing striker. Obviously, he's always been. I always think he's been a little bit overrated in MLS because he's been playing in the Eastern Conference. But as the Eastern Conference has gotten better, and the two goals he had, you just go like, you see world-class strikers miss those or take the wrong opportunity on those all the time. And he just seems to always know what to do. It's two brilliant goals. I think New York realistically probably could have held this one to 1-0 and taken the win. But Bradley Wright Phillips is something else and continues to be, and it's annoying as hell at his age. But he looks the best he's looked in MLS.
Yeah, whenever you see Bradley, I do think that this is a legitimate star year. Whenever you see him play live, it's obvious how good he is. Like, he's obviously such a key part of the New York game, and has been for a while. But this year, he's just put together some great goals. In some years, partially just because of what end of his career he's on, he is a great player and among the team's best players, but isn't necessarily sort of a star, isn't necessarily your number one person you go to, and that's partially because they had Kljestan. But he's got 3 in the league. He's got 3 in the Champions League. It's very, very early days in the season, but this could really be a sort of a mantelpiece season for Bradley Wright Phillips.
I agree. It seems to be age is not going to stop him, so it's going to be up to defenders to find a way. And as we've seen in MLS in the opening weeks, they don't seem necessarily up to the challenge. And if he's going to keep putting away those little chips and those 1v1 situations like he has been, sure, why not Golden Boot?
Mm-hmm. Another team I was really impressed by this week was Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
I was quite interested in the way that they were able to take and keep the lead against DC at home. You think that these are the types of performances they're going to hope to get all season, and you know they've got the most games. I think that they have the most any team has is 4 right now, and so it's not like they have any games in hand, whereas you know, a TFC still has two games to play, has played two fewer games. Atlanta has played one fewer game. But they do have the league co-lead right now after four weeks. And sometime or later, that has to be noticed.
Absolutely. The interesting thing for me, and I did watch all this match, of course, because I need to make sure David Ostead is okay, is that, you know, if you hear a 3-1 result against a team like DC United, you'd be like, okay, fair enough. And then who you would guess probably, okay, Higuain got one, and probably Zardes got one, and, you know, the usual suspects. But actually, the goals were Valenzuela, Ricardo Clark, who I actually thought had retired. I was like, oh, there he is. He's just in Columbus. And Pedro Santos. Mm-hmm. And they were all great goals. And I really like seeing a team like this that has some depth. If a team can win 3-1 without any of their major players scoring goals, I think that bodes very, very well. And Columbus just seems to be playing with a little bit of swagger in its step. And, you know, that an underdog approach of just, why not? You know, we made the playoffs last year. I think it's not a secret they know this could be their last season as a Ohio franchise in MLS. And they're just gunning for it. And they're going to see how far it can take them. The other thing that really, really impresses me, and I want to know your thoughts about this, is there's several players that we knew at the end of last season wanted to leave Columbus. And Higuain was one of them who put in a request for a transfer. However, whatever, it didn't materialize. He stayed with the team. I've been really impressed that that doesn't seem to have affected his play at all. And he seems to have just refocused, reset, and seems entirely committed to having the best season possible. Do you think this is just a product of him being slightly more mature and that's just the kind of person and player he is? Or, like, what do you make of Higuain's continued impact with Columbus, despite knowing that, you know, even leading up to the preseason and during the preseason, there were still rumors that he would be leaving?
I think that that's a... I think that it has to be an attempt to put down, like you mentioned, sort of the maturity angle, and I think that does have to be a part of it. I think that if there's a professional pride there, if there's an understanding that this could be the last season in Columbus, that when players like Will Trapp, who is absent this week, are putting down so much and committing so much to the team, I feel like when you're in, you're in. I don't know. I mean, obviously, everybody would still be under contract, but you don't want to appear like if he still wants to move next year, if Columbus moves and he does not want to move with them, obviously, having a bad season would hurt his trade value.
Yeah.
Or his value to another team. And just, you know, you don't want, when you're 33, you don't want to just burn a year, you know, like that is
a good point. That's a really good point. That, I mean, a little on the nose, I'll be turning 32 soon, but
hey, I mean, in MLS, I mean,
I get it. I think it's very practical, right? There is a real sense of like, he doesn't have a year to burn. He doesn't have that luxury. Mm-hmm. I agree.
He's played there since 2012, and I feel like there's been enough. I mean, nobody, I think, after a distinguished career of service would say would be mad at him for leaving in this weird situation,
mm-hmm.
in which other players also left. But obviously, the club still means something to him.
Yeah, and I do think that. Even from some sort of what I saw around those rumors, there was really no ill will towards him when he wanted away. I think fans are being fairly pragmatic. They'd like their star players to stay, but I didn't get some sense of, oh, Higuain the traitor. And they're also very happy that he's still there. But it is unusual to have that situation where a player publicly wants away stays, and everybody's just like, eh, it's fine, it's cool. They can keep their spot.
Like he didn't.
But as you said, it's kind of like, are you in or are you out? You're in? Okay, then you're in. But
you mean he didn't just leave the country and go to somebody else's training camp for a while and just hope it sticks?
Who are you talking about, sir?
Well, it could be any number of players, and that's the sad part.
Yeah, that's true. I was like, actually, no, but actually, who? Great result for Columbus, and as you said, it's great to see them doing so well early on into the season. A bit of a perhaps head scratcher this week, but was actually kind of a fun game to watch. Was New England and New York City FC sharing a point 2-2, sort of trading goals back and forth, but everything that we talked about New England the last couple of weeks, they seem to have been listening, if not to us, to others, and responded in some way. What do you take away from this game? Is this just it's sooner or later New England is going to score goals and has luck, or is there more to this and them getting a really good result against a very, very good team?
Well, I got to catch about the, I would say, the last half of the game. And I think that when you go back and look at some of the goals, the attack was hopping, I think, a little bit better than it has in the past. Despite the fact that, wow, they had a really terrible position stat.
They did.
When you look at, I guess when you look at the goals in the highlights, they have that. I kind of joked a little bit to you before. I was the one who is complaining about a 4-goal game and saying this was, as much as there were a lot of goals, this was just a very sort of competently but not excitingly played game, where it's like everything sort of just like slotted in where you expected it to goal wise. But maybe I was being a little hard on it.
No, I mean, it's a little harsh, but I don't think that's entirely unfair. For me, I thought it was great that Fagundes got on the board early on. And, you know, you don't expect New England to score against any team 11 minutes in, let alone New York City FC. Looking at the two styles of play, though, New England, we know, likes to press high. And New York City loves to keep the ball and kick it around, a la Manchester City, but just slower. And so I think those two styles kind of canceled each other out a little bit, but very early on, New York City looked fucking frazzled. Like, they did not know how to deal with a New England that was like, oh, no, we're trying. We're actually going to address all the things that we're normally really bad at, and we're going to score a goal in the 11th minute. And that did seem to throw them, and I'd say for most of the first half, New England looked the much better side, despite not having much possession.
Yeah.
The interesting note here was in the absence of David Villa, Ismail Tajouri, I think is how you say his last name, he's stepped up, and I believe he has now 3 goals in 2 games filling in that role.
So I've been interested in him. He's good.
Yeah, so I would definitely had a sort of note of like, okay, we'll be paying more attention to him in the future. I thought it was an okay match. I agree it wasn't the most exhilarating thing in the world for a 4-goal game. But I do appreciate that New England seemed to do a lot of seemed to correct a lot of their mistakes until about the 75th minute, whereas it all started to go south for them and they lost control of the game, and Tajouri scored again and got the point. My main takeaway from this match was Lee Wynn was not on the pitch. He is not injured.
Wow.
He is one of the best players on that team. And I gotta wonder, is he just going to be benched until the summer, and is he serving out a punishment? Or is he just not needed right now? Because the way that New England are showing that they are capable of performing, you go, maybe we can sort of scold Lee Wynn and also prove that, and we're proving that players have taken his spot, and if he wasn't willing to fight for it, the spot's gone and he'll have to fight for it back or just not play.
Well, you talked about players that publicly announce their desire to leave and what happens after that. And that does not always end pretty.
No. I mean, it would be disappointing, but...
You're right, I think, to say that they're in an attacking way, that that there may not be a spot as good as he has been for New England. That attack, the attack between Teal Bunbury and Diego Fagundes looked great.
Yeah.
And obviously, from the goal, pulling Juan Aguadelo off the bench was a great success as well.
Yeah, and I'd sort of forgotten about him, too. And when they put him on, I was like, oh, yeah, this guy, like he can deliver.
Fagundes and Aguadelo have long been the players where, you know, if it's been a rough week, you look at it and you say, well, we know those players are good, but the whole team can't really string it together. From an attacking perspective, it's not necessarily, you know, an addition of Lee Wynn would really change the deal. It's that sort of ability to hold it in through 90 minutes. What were you about to say about Aguadelo?
I was about to say it about Lee Wynn is that, and just riffing off of your point, I don't see where he slots in really at this point. And we've seen as well that when New England has struggled, he has struggled. And he's a great player, so he might string together a couple of plays, but the head goes down, the shoulders slump. The response has not been consistent from him. But I was going to say, you know who needs Lee Wynn if they could move some money around and where I think he'd do really well? Colorado.
Yeah.
Right? I think he'd be a great signing for them. I think he'd fit well within their system. He's quick, but he's great on the ball. He could connect some of those passes to their good forwards. There's no rumor here. This is just purely my own speculation of where he would fit in. Because I was always sort of like, maybe one day he'll come back to the Whitecaps. But now I go, I can't think of a lot of teams that really need him.
Well, it's the point too about obviously he's a great player in MLS and it's not like he's fringe by any means. But sometimes you have a player, and we talk about Darren Maddux this way, that floats around until they kind of find where their role is.
Yeah.
Find the team that really does need them.
Absolutely. And I think this may well be the one of those cases, right? Is he's got to find the right opportunity. And as well as he's done in New England, I sort of get the sense that it's time to move on. And unfortunately,
yeah,
the situation doesn't seem too positive and doesn't shed a very good light on the player, but I still think he's a great player and deserves another crack. I just don't think it's going to come with this team, and I think the fan base and the club has kind of turned on him a little bit, and it seems as if the writing's on the wall, not just because he put it there, but the team kind of was like, all right. The not showing up to training camp thing I think was really immature, and whatever he was trying to force there didn't do him any credit, and you know, maybe his opinion of himself is a little higher than perhaps it is around the league. Certainly people know what he's capable of, but pulling a stunt like not showing up to training camp is not going to endear himself to many coaches. And as much as there's MLS rivalries, we know all these coaches talk and they're all friendly. And I can't imagine many people are looking at that situation and going, oh, this is a guy we need on our squad.
I never really looked back on the idea on the Whitecaps moving him after bringing him into the league due to the issue of an anti-gay slur on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I kind of felt that it was penance paid at that point. Like I never necessarily sort of looked at him as a villain additionally to that, because he lost his job, but he found a home in New England, and I don't know necessarily if I don't think there's a role right now for him in the Whitecaps, as you mentioned that, but it kind of sucks that he made the spot for himself after sort of, you know, being being cut adrift by Vancouver, and then unmade his own bed as quickly as he had made it when he first arrived.
Yeah, it is too bad. It sort of seemed like perhaps he could be one of the long mainstays in New England, and certainly, as you said, made a home for himself there. But yeah, I agree. The last match that we have to talk about is not super notable. A 1-1 draw is never the most exciting thing to talk about. But notable is Portland Timbers scored a goal! Oh my.
That isn't what I thought you were going to say. Because, okay, yes, Portland scored a goal. It was a great goal, although it was one of those individual goals from Sebastian Blanco that makes you feel like maybe it didn't solve any lessons.
Nope.
If a team is having trouble scoring goals, you want to see a goal from build-up play, but I guess they'll take whatever they can get. Mm-hmm. And it was the goal they did score was a marvelous outside the box, just the type of thing where you see a player just looks to my untrained eye as if it's just a player who says, "Okay, I'm going to score now," and then just does it.
Oh, I don't know. I think that is the case. Absolutely. I hate bestowing any sort of credit to Portland Timbers. But that was one where you have to stand up, clap your hands and nod and go, well, yep, if you're going to do that, then sure, have a goal. It was good to see from Portland because they have definitely struggled. However, I agree. I think this was probably the one notable thing that Portland did in this match, and they've not looked good. And
there was one other one.
What?
Lawrence Olam jumping in front of his keeper to slap the ball with his hand.
Yeah. That was
among my favorite MLS red cards of all time.
Yeah.
Wow. Just.
It was so bad I forgot about it. I watched this game too, and, you know, as much criticism as MLS has had in recent weeks. Oh, and we forgot to say that Kendall Waston's red card got rescinded.
Yes.
But this is just like, the only other thing that is as sure of a red card is sucker punching a dude in the nuts, which happened the week before. Different player, true. Different team. But this was like, what the fuck are you doing? It's like, it's so bad. It's so bad. And
it was so unnecessary. Just.
I mean, look, I've played and I understand sometimes your arms just do weird things and you have weird instincts to just keep the ball out of the net anyway, anyhow. But considering Olam's experience, it almost looked like he was trying to get away with it too. And it's like, there's like 18 different angles of this. We know you just hit the ball away. Oh, it was a silly, silly, silly red card.
Why did that happen?
I don't. Rush of blood to the head. Oh, okay, it was very, very hot in Dallas. It was two hydration breaks. Humidity is high. I'm going to chalk it up to heat and give him the benefit of the doubt. Because I think Olam's a smart player, but that was just like, yeah, you can't do that.
They needed one more hydration break? Is this what you're suggesting to me?
Perhaps. Maybe he didn't hydrate his hands well enough. I don't know.
Yes. That was it for the MLS games of the week. As you mentioned, Kendall Waston of the Vancouver Whitecaps got his red card rescinded. Mm-hmm. Which I think that in terms of Vancouver fans, they were just surprised that it happened. They were just like, this never happens.
I think Vancouver Whitecaps were more surprised about the red card getting rescinded than they were about the red card in the first place. Like, wait, what? They actually, oh. Well, okay. I mean, kind of a moot point because he was still away on international duty and couldn't play against LA, but I think it is great that he'll be there against Columbus. And we have a very good track record against Columbus, so I'm glad. Or will he be back?
I think that is yes. I think as far as I remember from before the game, so this could be wrong. I do seem to recall that it was an issue that back before when he was still suspended, that was going to be the issue, but I could be wrong.
Let's say he's back.
Let's say he's back. But it's the appeal path is so fascinating to me. Because you now have, as much as everybody sort of complains about Ismael Elfath, you have Elfath made the call on the field.
Mm-hmm.
And then VAR overruled him. And then he was overruled.
Yeah, and so that's a great talking point. Apparently, Robinson had quite a long conversation with Howard Webb, who is leading the VAR crew in MLS, about this. And I imagine that was part of it, is that Elfath actually originally, I think, made the right call. But then he gets mm-hmm. VAR chirping in his ear. And you want to avoid situations where VAR is making a referee question their decision to the extent that they now go, well, the other referee saw it, so there must be something there, rather than going, no, I saw what I saw and I was correct in my call. Mm-hmm. I don't want to play the blame game or say what the call should have been either way in any game, because it's just an endless black hole of coulda, woulda, shoulda. But it is very interesting that it was overruled and then overruled, and then, I don't know, you have to go to Geneva in front of the Wizard of Oz, and it's just such a bizarre thing. But I'm glad they got the call right in the end, because it was, obviously, it did affect the game. But it's good to see that the appeal process sometimes can work and that common sense can prevail.
There was the funny note after all that that nonsense happened last week, that Ismael Elfath, who was named in a ESPN poll by at least one cheeky player as the toughest opponent in MLS, refereed the Peru game where he sent off Orlando's Yoshi Yotun for trying to get in Luka Modric's face to stop a quick free kick.
He's a weird guy. I don't know. I think he's an okay ref.
For a second yellow. Second yellow.
I think he gets a hard time sometimes, but I can see it. Before we move on too much, who's your team of the week this week?
Columbus.
All right.
If you would have gone first to pick Columbus, I would have picked New York.
That's fair, because I was going to say New York.
Oh, great.
But my player of the week is Diego Rubio. His little goal for SKC, I thought was brilliant.
That was very good. I just, again, think that it would be such a... Their run to the playoff semifinals was so interesting last year, and... if not Vancouver, it would be, I mean, it's just a pie in the sky thought at this point, but it would be a very interesting to see them do something.
I'm all about a Columbus Cup run this year. I think it would be such a great story. And
that's serious sports movie stuff. Like,
oh yeah. It's like up there with a Leicester kind of underdog story of, and Sirius, I think, already is beginning to have some consequences for this talk of where the team goes next, because there's, I don't follow all of it, but there does seem to be significant pushback that if the team is going to be sold, that there are business people in Columbus that deserve the opportunity to bid on the company, not just a foregone conclusion that you need to move the club. So... Mm-hmm. Already, I think the results are beginning to have an effect, not to take anything away from the tremendous fan support and organization mm-hmm. that's gone on to help hashtag save the crew.
I almost feel like calling the Leicester thing underplays it. This is like Blues Brothers. The orphanage is getting shut down.
Oh, yeah. Okay? That's a much better... The orphanage, this is Blues Brothers. You're right.
The orphanage is getting closed down by a scary business person, and they need to save it. They're on a mission from God.
Everybody, somebody. I'm gonna watch Blues Brothers tonight. Shit. May the ghost of Belushi reign over us all. What else Indeed. Do we have to talk about? What are we missing from this week? We covered the six matches that were played.
We followed Ismael Elfath's gap week. The NWSL started off their campaign for 2018 with two draws and Seattle and North Carolina winning. It's great to see action back on the pitch again with them.
Yeah, I feel like that's something I want to do more of this season is pay a little bit more attention there. I think, like a lot of people that do care about women's soccer but maybe don't necessarily follow it as much as we should, we see the international level games, but forget that these players are all club players as well, most of whom also have secondary jobs. So when you see the abilities and the play of some of these players, knowing full well that they probably work a full-time job on top of whatever other commitments they have, is even more impressive. But I started following Orlando Pride a little bit last season, and they didn't have a great season, but they were fun to watch, and I love bringing Marta in, and getting to see some good scrappy matches. And if you complain about North American soccer or any soccer and people just falling down and trying to buy fouls, man, watch NWSL, because you have to slit someone's throat for them to stay down on the pitch.
Well, I'm always happy to talk about it. NWSL, listeners, if you would love to know more about this league, we would love to talk about it. I got to see about the first half of the Portland Thorns opener, but I had to split before North Carolina scored their goal.
Shoot.
As much as the Cascadia connection, I'm able to separate the teams in my mind enough to be able to support the Thorns because of the presence of Christine Sinclair.
I allow it. I think that is a perfectly acceptable justification. If Christine Sinclair ever joins Portland Timbers, I may have to do some soul searching. At this point, I think they could definitely use her. I think at any point they could use her.
Yeah.
Fuck, man, wouldn't that be great? Christine Sinclair could turn their season around.
Well, I just want, like, whenever they have these alumni games, or whenever they have these games where they bring back former Vancouver Whitecaps players, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that, except for maybe Bob Leonarduzzi, to the average Canadian, Christine Sinclair is the most famous former Vancouver Whitecap.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And I don't know why. Especially in a scenario like that, where it's a relaxed time, they don't bring players like that back more. I think it maybe has happened, but it wasn't, or that they brought back a national women's team player for one of those things, but I don't think it was Sinclair.
No, I'm just, I'll say
LaRue.
I'll
say, I guess LaRue played for the Whitecaps too, but I don't think she'd be famous to a Canadian unless they're a supporter who is mad at her.
Or somebody.
I don't go in for that. I don't go in for that really, like, in the same way, because I feel like the tradition of rivalry is way different. I feel like that's kind of more of a European support way of thinking about it,
yeah,
in terms of people that really vehemently hate Sydney Leroux for not committing for Canada, but. But at the same time, that's what she's known for in Canada.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm just saying that Reyna 1v1 against the goalkeeper, Christine Sinclair would have fucking sunk that one. Just saying. Sorry. I always say these things right as you've just taken a mouthful of something.
No, it's good. It's good.
I'm also not kidding. Like, fuck me. She.
No.
That's her forte. Great. Well, are we good then? Did we do it? I mean, I guess there weren't.
I think we did
there's
it.
There's not that much to talk about, really. There'll be some more games next week. It's weird. It's weird that only one Canadian team played this week.
Yeah, I guess the buys were interesting in terms of who got a buy, who didn't. Which I guess is probably just sort of, should they have had any games at all this week, or is it just an issue of you've got to get some stuff in?
I think it's just an issue if you've got to get some stuff in, and this year is just going to be a wacky one for MLS in terms of World Cup and the various international breaks and things like that.
Yeah.
There's just going to be a lot of weird weeks going on, which the
Audi.
I'm not totally ungrateful for, considering I've got a ton of schoolwork to do around that period. So if I had to rush off to like 4 Whitecaps home games in a stretch like I did last year, it could get a little tight. So it's not the worst thing in the world, but there's some interesting matchups ahead next week that I think we'll have lots to talk about. Obviously, a red hot Columbus playing Vancouver that's finding its form. We've got LA Galaxy and LAFC, as you said, in their first rivalry match. Minnesota Atlanta. I'm sure Minnesota would like to go back and get some revenge for the railroading that they got last year. And then, looking around the league, there should be some interesting things coming up.
Yeah. Oh, there was one thing coming out of the LA game that I wanted to talk about that was kind of more of a lower tier thing. Just because I remember when I was in Vancouver, I had really great memories of attending these LA games. Do you think that Vancouver and LA have a rivalry? Because I feel like Vancouver has always got up for it. But I wonder if that, I feel like there is something of a connection, because the Vancouver host, Vancouver as a USL team hosted the Galaxy in the pre-Olympics BC Place, in kind of what was one of the first proof of concepts of Vancouver as a major league team, and very early in the Beckham era.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there is, in LA was Vancouver's first playoff opponent. Do you think that that's a rivalry, or is that just the case where that when one team has the stars, they're kind of rivals with everyone?
I think it's that. I also think for a long time, LA was the monkey on Vancouver's back, a team that we just could not beat. And certainly we couldn't beat away. I'd like to point out that Russell Tybert changed that. I feel like, did we beat them last season? That might have been the last time we beat them. I can't recall.
That's possible. I can't recall.
That was a few years ago now. I'm going to say no. I think that we were rivals for a while. I kind of see them like a Dallas situation. There was some bad blood because of some bad calls and some bad plays, and we just faced these teams, and they seemed to just somehow beat us, but it never quite felt fair. From my perspective, we were always way more rivals with Gilles Van Damme than with LA Galaxy. And now that that's been remedied, it's kind of like, not really. It seems like sort of a concocted one. But it's interesting that you asked the question, because I've been asking myself that question of, with a neutered Portland and Seattle this season, or at least teams off to a rough start, I kind of go, who are Vancouver's rivals this season? Or do we just not have enough club identity at the moment and enough results to really show who we're going to be really up against? Certainly, I think, and I don't know if we're facing Atlanta again. I doubt it. I think certainly we'd want to get something more out of that match, especially after the horrendous red card incident. But I kind of struggle to come up with, who is Vancouver's rival right now? And not just in terms of course we'll get at Seattle and get at Portland when we play them, but in terms of a team that's like us and a threat and that we love to hate, I don't really know who that is right now.
You're right. When you mentioned Dallas, and I also think of RSL in the same way.
Yeah.
Those have gone down a little bit, and RSL, like Portland, Seattle, are teams that are having a little bit of a downswing. Although, let's not be too hasty about Seattle, which, like Toronto, neither team has a win this year, but they also have half as many games played.
Yep.
Between them, they have as many games played as some other MLS teams.
Oh, yeah, and if Dempsey can keep himself on the pitch and his hands to himself, then I'm sure there'll be some interesting chance thrown his way.
When can we start looking at this at the standings and actually thinking that they mean anything?
July. I mean, realistic though, to me, it's like who weathers the storm. I mean, it's interesting to watch it take shape, but as we saw last season, things still bounce around so late that It will be an interesting season because of the slow start for last year's champions and the defending champions to see if they can turn things around and really challenge. But realistically, and this is kind of why I love it right now, is it's up for anyone to grab. Certainly there's teams that we think are going to do better than others. I don't think it's going to be Colorado that perhaps we're talking about next October.
My favorite undefeated team is Philadelphia.
Yeah, sure. And there you go. Like, there's a perfect example of a team that's doing everything right, that has potential. Why not Philadelphia? And they could be the sleeper team of the season if they can just keep grinding out results. Early games matter, and sure, we're only 4 weeks in, but they've done quite well so far. If they can hang on to that, and defensively they've been sound, then sure. But looking at the table, I don't really see much developing in the MLS table until about late September in terms of being able to call it, especially in the West, and increasingly the East is like that too. So I think it's going to be a while, and we'll take it week by week.
Well, that's also great news for my fantasy team. You see, I've been playing, as noted on Twitter, I've been playing this four-dimensional chess where I don't update my lineups and therefore conserve my energy.
I felt quite poor that I got a little bit skewered this week, and then I looked at your team and I was like, what? Did you just play all goalkeepers? I don't think that's possible, but you just didn't update your team. And then our dear friend, the Impact fan, has taken number one spot again, but I was somewhat resigned.
Olivier,
what are you doing to me, man? I swear to God, he's got a direct line to some of these Eastern Conference teams that he just seems to know what's going to happen. It's utterly unfair.
He's solid.
I think he should be forced to only choose Western Conference teams from now on.
While you rewatch the Blues Brothers, where can we find you online?
You can find me online on Netflix watching Blues Brothers, and also at Twitter at That's So MLS. Where can we find you?
You can find me at Team Bates, www.team-bates.com. I am an editor at Howler Magazine, whatahowler.com, and you can find this podcast on iTunes and wherever great podcasts are found at That's So MLS.
And
please give us a rating and a review.
Yeah, I was going to say that bit. Do that, because it helps. Must be the end of the episode. It helps. It helps us get listeners, because people don't know what to listen to. And if you rate it and you like it and you share it, then people know what to listen to. So if you like the show, share it, because that's how people find out about podcasts. You can literally just shout at somebody on the bus. That's better than an iTunes rating. You know what? In fact, don't rate us on iTunes. Shout at somebody on the bus about listening to our podcast.
Why not both?
Well, you could do both.
Until the next time, I know it may be attractive to try and catch the ball. Try to hand the ball right in front of your goalkeeper. But please, Nick, don't get sent off.
I will let the goalkeeper do his job and I will do mine. Hands to yourself. Good times.
Yeah, that was great.